Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, May 12, 2021. Security forces killed two protesters in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
About five of them, they are suffering very critical conditions. They've been admitted in the hospitals around Khartoum.
And a South Sudanese woman is seeking protection after receiving threats from gangs in the Egyptian capital, Cairo.
I didn't see any sort of protection from our South Sudan's embassy. I didn't see anything. The ambassador talked to me during the time I was busy taking my boy for further medical checkups. But till now, I have not heard from him anymore.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's transitional government is under fire after security forces used live ammunition Tuesday to disperse people, marking the two-year anniversary of a pro-democracy protest, leaving two people dead. Sudanese Professional Association condemned the attack, calling it a violation of freedom of assembly. Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok has instructed the country's Attorney General to investigate the incident. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
The Sudanese Medical Doctors Association confirmed that at least two protesters were shot and killed last evening at military headquarters in Khartoum. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus this past hour, Dr. Walidin Al-Faki, a member of the association, says as of this morning, 37 individuals were wounded and are undergoing treatment, including five who are listed in critical condition at the hospital in Khartoum. He says some of the protesters were hurt in a traffic accident when they were running away from the area.
About five of them, they are suffering very critical conditions. They've been admitted in the hospitals around Khartoum, and Royal Care, Fidel, and Muallim in Zaytuna. And there are some of the wounded were wounded due to traffic accidents while they are running away from that area.
Dr. Al-Faki says the transitional government should ensure that justice is served for all protesters who were killed or the protests will escalate against the government. Sahar Al-Juzuli, a member of the Abu Adam Resistance Committee, condemned the killings and called for an immediate investigation. Al-Juzuli says the incident underscores a serious lack of decision-making between civilian and military leadership in the government, which, she says, does not benefit those who fought for democratic reforms. She says the revolution is separate from the government and is still going on. Al-Juzuli says the transitional government does not respect the rights of people out in the streets resisting. Ahmed Youssef, a member of the Umma National Party, describes the incident as unfortunate and says it has broken the hearts of many Sudanese families. Youssef says the actions of the military wing of the government clearly shows that there is a serious need to revive the power-sharing deal. Youssef says he believes the current constitutional document is swayed in favor of military over civilians. He says a transitional justice commission must be established and warns the country is, in his words, on a dangerous path threatening towards the edge of the abyss.
These are very unfortunate events. They set us back a great deal. To put a firm end to such crimes, we must establish the Transitional Justice Commission, which is very important. Our country is now on a dangerous path and is teetering on the edge of the abyss.
Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok convened an emergency meeting with the Minister of Interior, Defense and Attorney General, Director of the General Intelligence Service and the Governor of Khartoum State, and called for an immediate investigation into the incident. The officials agreed that the perpetrators of the violence must be brought to justice without delay. In a statement released directly after the meeting, the officials said, "Our memory is still burdened with the events that took place 2 years ago in the vicinity of the military headquarters, in which our sons and daughters lost their lives and hearts of the many Sudanese families were broken." For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still on Sudan, Sudanese investigators this month questioned top military chiefs on the ruling Sovereign Council over a deadly June 2019 crackdown on pro-democracy protesters. They include head of the Rapid Support Forces, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, who rights groups blame for the violent crackdown that left more than 120 people dead. But as Naba Mohiyadin reports from Khartoum, right defenders and relatives of victims doubt he will face justice.
Those being investigated, including the head of the ruling Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and the head of the controversial Rapid Support Forces, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, who rights groups blame for the violent dispersal that left more than 120 people dead. A special investigation committee was formed in October 2019, and 3,000 witnesses provided testimony to the committee. In a televised interview, the chief of the committee, Nabil Adib, confirmed the investigations with the military generals. Adib says they summoned anyone they thought is relevant or has information to provide. No one objected it, and they were not prevented from summoning any person with no exceptions. The crackdown took place on June 3, 2019, when security forces attacked and dispersed thousands of pro-democracy protesters in Khartoum. In June 2019, a spokesman for then-ruling military junta, General Shamsuddin al-Kabashi, admitted on national television that generals planned the dispersal. Kabashi says they called for a meeting that was attended by all of the Transitional Military Council and the Chief of Security Forces and took advice from the legal apparatuses to deal with the sit-in. We then directed the military leaders to plan the dispersal of the sit-in. They put their plan and executed it. And then what happened has already happened. We are sorry about it. There were some mistakes and committing of abuses. Al-Kabashi now says he misspoke that day. Kabashi says he mentioned the dispersal of the sit-in in his previous statements, but what he said was taken out of context. In April 2021, a group known as the Families of the December Revolution Victims asked the International Criminal Court to investigate the dispersal for possible crimes against humanity. This is Farah Abbas, a father of a victim and the chief of the organization. Abbas says he expects the committee of the sit-in dispersal will say what happened cannot be changed, as the military leader said. The case's files are in front of the ICC, and the ICC is completing the gaps and defects in the local justice system and courts, when there is no willingness to achieve justice and when there is an absence of law. Relatives of victims like Iman Ismail, a mother of a June 3rd crackdown victim, doubt any of the military generals will face justice. She says there is a sluggishness about the procedures of the Abin cases regarding the victims, and that refers to the unqualified and non-transparent justice system. The sit-in dispersal committee isn't useful and is unnecessary as the evidence is abundant. Truth requires courage from the killers to admit to the Sudanese people that they committed violence and let people decide the path of justice. The families of the victims called for a gathering around the military headquarters in Khartoum Tuesday, but the Sudanese military blocked access with barricades and heavy vehicles. Naba Mohiyadin for VOA News, Khartoum, Sudan.
Still on Sudan, Sudan is facing an acute shortage of medical oxygen as a third wave of coronavirus infections swells in the economically struggling country. For VOA News, David Doyle of Reuters has more.
In Sudan's capital Khartoum, oxygen cylinders are being loaded into the back of a car. They are on their way to a coronavirus patient's home for private use. But most of those seriously ill with COVID-19 are facing an acute shortage of medical oxygen. That's partly due to power cuts that impeded production at the economically struggling country's main plant. Hussein Malassi, a senior manager at the Sudanese liquid gas company, says a lack of cylinders is another problem.
Before the severity of this pandemic, the distribution of cylinders over the hospitals was sufficient. What happened is that the consumption of oxygen increased several times with the pandemic. And the cylinders at hospitals did not increase with the same level.
A government survey found that 38% of oxygen cylinders have been smuggled out of the health system for private use. Some patients bribed hospital staff, others relied on personal relationships. Everyone else has been left in hospitals unable to provide adequate care during a third wave of infections. Montasir Othman, Director of Emergency and Epidemic Control at Sudan's Ministry of Health, said times of peak infections make clear the weak capacity of Sudan's hospitals. He added that the government is working to make more cylinders available. But it's not just oxygen. The country, which has recorded 33,000 cases and 2,600 deaths since the start of the pandemic, has just 300 ventilators. Out of 37 hospitals that can take COVID-19 patients, only 11 are in the capital, which has 70% of cases. Last month, officials said Sudan could meet just 40% of its need for medicines. Social media is awash with desperate pleas for help as relatives seek oxygen cylinders, beds, and drugs for their loved ones.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, a South Sudanese woman is seeking protection in Egypt. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you know any first aid techniques?
Come to think of this question, I thought I do, but seriously, I think I may not be able to do too well if there is any situation present. Maybe it's something I need to go in and learn how to do. It could help somebody tomorrow.
During our school days, the Red Cross Society, the clubs that we joined, they taught us a lot. When a child runs high temperature, you sponge the child with water from the leg to the head. Then you just rush the person to the hospital for best treatment.
In case if you have drowned maybe from water, the first aid technique that is available to be given is a kiss of life to a person that has drowned into water.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linar Mudu. The World Health Organization and the Africa Centers for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A mother of a 14-year-old South Sudanese who was allegedly assaulted in the Egyptian capital Cairo last week says she continues to receive threats from unknown people who are pressuring her to drop a case against a group of Egyptian young men who assaulted her son. She says South Sudanese diplomats in Cairo have not offered her protection. For VOA News, Viola Elias has the story from Juba.
The boy's mother, Rania Deng, says her son was humiliated, beaten, and forced to wash dishes while his female cousins were raped by the attackers on camera. Deng says her son and his two cousins were on their way to attend a birthday party at their auntie's house when they were attacked by a group of Egyptian boys in Cairo and Shems residential area. A video showing Egyptian boy assaulting the South Sudanese boy went viral on social media last week. Rania Deng told South Sudan in Focus by phone that neither the South Sudan embassy nor the UNHCR have offered her family any kind of support since the incident happened.
I didn't see any sort of protection from our South Sudan's embassy. I didn't see anything. The ambassador talked to me during the time I was busy taking my boy for further medical checkups, but till now I have not heard from him anymore. I have no protection. I am still residing in the same building where they, criminals, know it. When I came back after reporting the case to the public prosecution office, they attacked me and I have to go back and report this incident again.
But in a statement seen by South Sudan in Focus, the South Sudanese ambassador to Egypt, Joseph Nom, said action have been taken against the perpetrators. He says the youth were arrested and are in police custody. The statement says, quote, "The embassy always seek to help all the members of our community, whether they are holders of South Sudanese passports or UNHCR cards," end quote. Ambassador Nom further said in the statement that as soon as he heard and watched the video clip, he engaged his contacts and competent authorities in order to grant the safety of the South Sudanese boy's family. "I insisted that the law should take its course," said Nom. Deng says police arrested three of the boys involved in the attack, including their mother. But she says two of the attackers, including the one who tortured her son, are still at large. Deng says some of the teenagers involved in the attack admitted raping the boy's sister.
They admitted that they raped some young girls, and they have also been taken for further laboratory tests, and now we are waiting for the results so that they don't deny it. The investigation is still ongoing. My son has been tortured because he actually resisted when the boys were raping his sisters.
Deng says despite receiving countless threats, she is determined to pursue the case until her children receive justice.
What I want is only that the right of my boy should be recognized. I don't want this case to be played with. I want our ambassador to intervene and make sure that those criminals are punished. I am here vulnerable. My country authorities have not offered me any protection, or the UN also. I am also afraid, as I expect that anything can happen to me. God is with me.
A video of the attack has outraged many people, including South Sudanese in the diaspora. South Sudan in Focus reached out to the Egyptian embassy in Juba for comment on attack. A secretary at the embassy said the Egyptian ambassador to Juba, Muhammad Kadid, who is the only person in the embassy authorized to speak to the media, was on leave. The Egyptian embassy in Juba issued a statement on their Twitter page condemning the attack, calling it unjust behavior. The acting spokesperson in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Ambassador Thomas Kennedy, says his ministry and South Sudan Embassy in Egypt are monitoring the case and will ensure that the perpetrators are punished. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Health authorities in South Sudan are left with 2 months for doses of the COVID-19 vaccine to expire. Dr. Richard Lako, the incident manager for COVID-19 at the National Ministry of Health, says misperceptions about COVID-19 vaccine is affecting turnouts at vaccination centers. The World Health Organization is expressing concern about what it calls low turnout, saying it poses a threat to the fight against the pandemic. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
The South Sudan Health Ministry says the number of people turning up for the vaccine jab has increased compared to a few weeks ago, but overall turnout is still low compared to neighboring countries. Dr. Richard Lako, incident manager for COVID-19 at the South Sudan Health Ministry, says the recent high turnout is due to the public's increasing awareness about the vaccine and intensified efforts by the health ministry to reach out to more people before AstraZeneca vaccine expires in July.
Now we're opening now to make sure that all the 10 states and the 3 administrative areas get the vaccines at the same time, and then make sure that we open up there. Not with fixed sites, we use different strategies, including use of mobile teams, and so that we'll be able to access more people.
Even though the government has been encouraging the public to turn up and get the shot, many people still seem reluctant to get vaccinated. Juba resident Sura Nelson says he is willing to take the jab but has yet to receive his first dose. Nelson says he is not sure who is eligible to get the vaccine.
I think those vaccines were not made for every South Sudanese. That is actually what the government said some days back. The number of the vaccines were broad limited that cannot cover everyone in South Sudan. And they were brought for a specific, you know, segment of the society. Because the government did mention the frontline health workers. The government did mention teachers. And then elderly people above the age of 60. So I'm not vaccinated because I checked myself, and I am not among this category.
Nelson praised the government for creating awareness on COVID-19 preventive measures, but complains that the government has done little to educate people about the vaccine.
It is really not yet understood for the case of South Sudan. Okay, it is vaccination, yes. How many times am I supposed to receive the jab, okay? Is it one, twice, or how many times? You see that? Okay, if someone like me, who do follow development trends from all media outlets, yes, I can understand how it goes. How about the other person who don't even have, you know, that time to follow media?
Despite receiving 132,000 doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine in March, South Sudan has the lowest number of people who have received their first dose of the vaccine in East Africa. Dr. Laku says less than 6,000 people have been vaccinated so far in the country. According to various data from WHO, Statista, and Africa News, in Uganda, more than 300,000 people have received their first dose of the vaccine. In Kenya, more than 850,000 people have received their first dose. And in Rwanda, more than 350,000 people got their first dose. Dr. Joseph Wamala, the World Health Organization's Emergency Health Response Officer in South Sudan, says the low turnout affects the fight against worldwide efforts to end the spread of the pandemic. In recent weeks, South Sudan has registered fewer cases of COVID-19. According to the official data released on Monday, the Health Ministry registered no new confirmed case of COVID-19 on that day. Still, Wamala says it is time South Sudanese step up the fight against the pandemic, which includes getting vaccinated. He says the population should continue observing preventive measures like regular hand washing, wearing face masks in public, and social distancing.
Even as we see cases declining here, given the global connectedness that we have with the region, I think we still need to sound the messages. And I think this is where the media comes in. Please continue sounding the drums. People should not, this is not the time to let the guard down. At the global level, the transmission is at its highest level.
To date, South Sudan has registered 10,647 confirmed COVID-19 cases, including 10,462 recoveries. There have been 115 deaths in the country since the outbreak of the virus. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on COVID, volunteers of a non-profit organization have been quietly collecting the ashes of India's unclaimed dead from crematoriums in and around New Delhi to give the bodies a respectful send-off as per Hindu traditions amid unprecedented surge in COVID-19 deaths. Reuters' Olivia Chan reports.
At New Delhi's main crematorium, two volunteers from NGO Sri Deodan Siwa Samiti have been quietly collecting the ashes of India's unclaimed dead, giving the bodies a send-off as per Hindu traditions. Ashish Kashyap respectfully washes the remains and prays over them.
These are the unclaimed remains of COVID-19 victims. During this pandemic, the relatives of these victims abandoned them. However, our organization collects these remains from all the crematoriums and performs the last rituals in Haridwar so that they can achieve salvation. 95% of the remains belong to COVID-19 victims.
95% corona se ekatrit wo hain astiyan.
The ashes are taken to the river Ganges, a river many Hindus consider holy, for a final ritual, which is said to ensure the souls of the deceased go to heaven and escape the cycle of rebirth. The following graphic video was obtained from Ghazipur district, where about 100 bodies of suspected COVID-19 patients were floating in the Ganges. Several villages along the riverbanks were alerted by the smell and informed the local authorities. India's coronavirus crisis shows scant sign of easing on Tuesday. The country's 7-day average of new cases is at a record high, with over 390,000 reported cases. International health authorities are warning the country's variant of the virus poses a global concern. India also leads in the daily average number of new deaths reported. According to a Reuters tally, the country accounts for one of every three deaths reported worldwide each day. For the volunteers at New Delhi's main crematorium, the abandoned deceased deserve a respectful farewell despite the overwhelming numbers.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We'd love to hear what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We will air your comments every Friday. We now leave you with the song Tutu Party by Emerson.
I dey watch like a bottom step and die. I see short skirts, hey, a mini skirt. Oh, who's one for dance sweet when this party goes that? I want salet, hey. I want ballet.
What you want?
Macale, any party back me alle.
Overload,
not to your business, but in a party you come. Left me make an overload if you at you gonna do. Oh, 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 yeah, yeah.
We've been listening to Emerson with the song Tutu Party. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Don't say, I never took the party. You
see me they jump, they swing cool and cozy. No, go see, I think I'm too fast.